I'm Debbie Dashinger. Welcome to Dare to Dream. Be inspired to live big and bold and take action to turn your dreams into your reality. Go beyond obstacles and limits of your thinking. Accelerate results to catapult yourself to success. I'm a visibility expert who gives media makeovers to clients, booking them on media interviews and turning their books into international bestsellers with guaranteed results. Join me at DebbieDashinger.com. Dare to do great things. Dare to shine. It's all about you becoming a visionary and leading the pack. Welcome to your daring new life. Welcome to Dare to Dream. I'm Debbie Dashinger. Pleasure to be here. And as always, I'm going to be introducing you and myself to somebody brand new. And that's what I love about doing this. I get to meet people who are part of my tribe out there in the world doing the good work, the really amazing work, and having a voice for a piece of heaven here on earth. So this show, Dare to Dream, it was created for you to inspire you to take steps towards your dreams and turn those goals into a reality. A little bit later on, today's show features Josh Tickell, who is an award-winning film director and best-selling author. He directs his focus to societal issues at large, such as capitalism and climate change. Josh Tickell will be on later on Dare to Dream. So a thought for today, a breath, and a thought for today is about diving deeper into the present moment. You know, today I'm bringing up the nature of the present moment. It's truly, we hear it said, it's all we have. Ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth? And when we go away because we're reliving something from the past or worrying, and worrying, of course, all worrying is about being in a future that hasn't happened and 99% chance will never happen, but we're spending our now present moment somewhere other than right here. So the nature of the present moment, if we look more closely into our understanding of time, we can see our experience in the now doesn't age. Whatever we experience in the present, that experience itself cannot get older and is not part of the passage of time. Time is a mental concept, not an actual experience. They say time is an illusion. All experience happens in ever-present awareness. Today, each of us, we can all right now make a choice, a new choice. Today, we can choose to build. Today, we can choose to shift our awareness to the present. So life flows effortlessly. And the idea and the thought that I offer you for today is being in the flow is effortless. Henry David Thoreau said, "You must live in the present. Launch yourself on every wave. Find your eternity in each moment." Josh Tickell, who will be on later, is an American film director who specializes in movies with a social message. His first feature film, Fuel, won the Sundance Audience Award for Best Documentary. He's been a global sensation, gaining over 1 million viewers on Netflix, iTunes, Hulu, and CNBC. Well, when we come back, Josh Tickell is here about talking about kissing the ground and solutions for a new planet. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Whether you're a wine novice, a wine lover, or a wine specialist, you will love directsellers.com/debswinewonders because it's sourced from boutique artisan vineyards from around the world. Give the wines as gifts for colleagues to bring to social situations or just enjoy it with family and friends. The box of wines I've been receiving from directsellers.com/debswinewonders are superb, to be frank. They take care in the wine they choose. Their in-house wine experts ensure that the members get only the best. They've been tasting and selecting wine for over 15 years. The goal with this club is to send you wine that you love. Each month, our experts select great premium wines from wineries around the globe. Your satisfaction is guaranteed.
at directsellers.com/DebsWineWonders. That's direct, CELLARS.com/DebsWineWonders.
Welcome back to Dare to Dream. I've got Josh Tickell here. Again, movies. They have won his movies more than 40 major awards. They've been selected as a New York Times critics pick, shortlisted for an Oscar, and shown in the White House. He has spoken at more than 100 colleges and Fortune 500 businesses globally, and Josh has been a guest on The Tonight Show, Good Morning America, Morning Joe, and on The Today Show. He recently co-directed the Lionsgate release, Good Fortune. Tickell's book, new book, which is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Save the World, is being turned into a movie from executive producer Leonardo DiCaprio. You can find out more about him at his website, joshtickell.com. Josh, welcome to Dare to Dream. It's great to have you.
Debbie, thanks so much for having me on.
Pleasure. I'm looking forward to learning more about your thoughts, your very cutting-edge thoughts on our planet today, and the work that you're doing. So let's start with your first movie, Fuel. This is a big deal. First movie out of the gate, and it wins the Sundance Audience Award for Best Documentary and to theaters globally. First film. What did winning that Sundance Audience Award do for you, confidence-wise, encouragement-wise, or message-wise?
Well, you know, it's always dangerous to have an early success, they say, because you can rise fast and you can fall just as fast. But I think on a deeper level, where we were at when Fuel came out in 2008, you know, we had just as a nation elected Barack Obama as president. We were still grappling with the implications of being at war in the Middle East, specifically Iraq, and due to the sort of Gulf oil syndrome. And so, you know, what it did, besides Sundance and all the hoopla, was it showed me that there was a strong, powerful community of people who was interested and willing to go to bat for media that told the truth and media that made a difference. And, you know, this is really pre the rise of Facebook, so we didn't have all these cool, young, kind of hip, you know, the Young Turks on Vice and stuff like this. So it was really clear early on, way back then, 10 years ago, like, wow, this is going to be a new time for entertainment. And Fuel was kind of, you know, at the forefront of that.
And how did it bode for you, thinking about doing more films, connecting more with your audience and what you had to say? Did it really help you get back out there, or were there things you had to consider for the next one?
There were. You know, I keep trying to quit writing books and making movies, and I keep trying to go back to farming because that's what I've always loved doing that, and that's, you know, a very spiritual and peaceful place. But honestly, for me, the issue of social change is not a one-and-done thing. I'm in this for the long haul. I see the issues that I tackle and that Rebecca, my wife, we tackle together in these films, these books. I see these as paramount issues to our civilization, to the time that we live in. So whether it's energy or whether it's oil or politics or global warming, I don't want to talk about, you know, the price of a latte. I'm interested in how are we dealing with the planet and how are we going to survive and thrive as a species. And so, you know, Fuel's early success showed me that at least there was a group of people that would resonate. If I kept making this information, people would keep consuming it.
Wow. And how powerful that really your love is of farming, and yet you're showing up really for all of us. You have a calling, obviously, and feel some responsibility, but in the end, to say how we will thrive and survive as a species, I mean, this is very important conversation. I want to shift a little bit here, because on the converse side, I'm interviewing you, but you also regularly film and interview a lot of luminaries like Elon Musk and Dan Aykroyd, Sheryl Crow, Shailene Woodley. Love these people. What have you learned spending time with, for instance, Elon Musk? What has Elon taught you that you hadn't considered before and it wasn't part of your practice or in the wheelhouse for you?
Well, it's interesting, Debbie. You know, you began this show speaking about time. Mm-hmm. And one of the conversations that I had with Elon that I distinctly remember, it sticks out in my mind, I often think about it, was about the power of the future and how the future works. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, I see the future as a series of branches coming off of a trunk. And as you get further out in the future, you know, the branches get thinner because it's less easy to predict where it's going. But that initial trunk is pretty easy to see. And as you go off, oh, it could branch this way, it could branch that way. If it branches that way, there's another branch that could happen. And so to have that powerful visual of time stretching out from where we are today, and, you know, Elon's somebody who literally created the future. He wrote the future. He said, well, we're going to change vehicle transportation for the next 100 years. We're going to change the idea of space exploration. We're going to change solar power. Those were critical pieces that no one else could sort of put into place. So I think that, you know, part of what I've learned from these luminaries, and there are so many unsung heroes that are in our films, that are in our books, that aren't big stars, that are changing the world, but they all of them have something in common, and that is literally the ability to write the future, and that is a very, very powerful trait.
Mm. And what about Dan Aykroyd? What did you learn about spending time with him? I mean, we all think of him as such a great comedian and musician, actually. But what kind of luminary or illuminating thoughts did he help you with or get you thinking about or seeing in a new way?
You know what I like about Dan, and I think this is what I took away from my time with him, he's bold. And he doesn't take life too seriously. Like, he's super bold, you know. The way he speaks, his demeanor is unapologetically him. And so, you know, the lessons I take away from that are be bold, and, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human. Don't get too mired in the small stuff. Don't get depressed. Don't take it all seriously, you know?
Mm-hmm. So let's explore this, and I love that idea, you know, be bold, don't take things too seriously. That would be great for all of us, really. Show up, do our good work, and have a lightness of being would be nice so we can have some fun as well. And this is sort of a heavy transition subject when I'm talking about fun, but I'd really like to talk about exploring big ideas bringing a supportable future for life on Earth. Are there ways that you know of, are there big ideas that you're quite sure will and can sustain life?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to preface this by saying we live in we almost live in a dystopian time. Our view of the world is so cynical. As a country, and I'm not talking about the viewers of this show. You're an enlightened host. You have wonderful listeners and viewers, I'm sure. But you know, if you look out at politics and you look out at news and you look out at the world and where things are going, it's so easy to sort of look into the darkness. And if you look at the millennial goals, the 10 goals outlined by the United Nations, each of the goals relates to some massive cataclysmic type problem that we are seeing as a species. So whether it's desertification or hunger, education, women's rights, all of these things. And And you think, God, this is an insurmountable set of challenges. You know, the sixth major species extinction, climate change, global warming, carbon dioxide levels growing exponentially, human population. It all seems completely like a wall of epic proportions. But, you know, there's an old saying, how do you eat an elephant?
Right, one bite at a time.
One bite at a time, right? And so you see a lot of wonderful, powerful people going, these are just big challenges. They're not insurmountable. And the scale of the problems has to be addressed with the scale of solutions. And I think that's, we mentioned it, Elon Musk, that's what Musk did. He said, let's stop trying to solve this big problem with tiny little solutions. Let's go ahead and solve it with big solutions. So Kiss the Ground, the new book that I have, which is turning into a documentary, that is a big solution to a big problem. Climate change is the problem. The big solution is, let's suck all of the CO2 out of the atmosphere and do it all together. Like, let's not worry about incremental change. Let's do a global change so that we literally reverse global warming. That's the upshot of that project.
What kind of movie is Kiss the Ground going to be?
It is going to be extremely hopeful and extremely balanced, meaning that you even looking at the rough cut, there are moments where I get depressed watching it. But at the end of the day, at the end of the film, when it's done, each time, each pass that we take on it, I get stronger and I get more hopeful. And it's not that kind of like pie-in-the-sky hope. It's like, okay, I am clear, super clear on what we as a species need to do, and I'm clear on what I'm going to do.
Mm. And independent films, are these a great resource to find unfiltered truth? Is this where we, those of us who adhere to what you talk about and this message and really give a damn about what's going on and want to see change or a part of that change, should we be turning more and more to independent films as a great resource for unfiltered truth?
I mean, I wish I could say yes wholeheartedly to that question. I will tell you, and I'll be completely honest. Mm-hmm. Every film that I make has some kind of agenda, and the way I get them funded is by people who agree with that agenda. Now, Rebecca and I set the agenda. So if we're going to make Kiss the Ground, our agenda is to reverse global warming. Clearly, that film is not going to be funded by people who don't believe that global warming is happening. So, you know, we try and be scientific, optimistic, world-changing, and empowering with our films. And we try and find funding sources that will align with that. I can't say that for everybody in the independent film space. I've seen a lot of independent films where I go, I can taste what the money wanted you to say with this film. And either it's a mistruth, or it's not the truth, or it's just a flat-out lie. And that's where I think independent filmmaking is, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because we have no public finance for arts in the United States, unlike other countries, Canada, Europe.
Right.
We run the risk of private money, you know, making up stories that they want us to believe. So I think you have to be very discerning as a viewer today.
Amazing. And your film itself, when you're talking about it, will be a lot of hope. And yet, you know, it sounds like it's very moving for you to sit back and watch. How's it been working with Leonardo DiCaprio? Do you have a lot of connection with him during the film and watching the edits?
I've never met him personally. So that's the reality of that relationship. But we do get notes. And the notes are very, very, very intelligent. They're sophisticated and very helpful, as a matter of fact. So I look forward to meeting him one day. And it's surprising when you get to work with these big powerhouses. You get to know them through their teams. he has an exceptional team. He's got the former director of the EPA of California, Terry Tanman. Terry runs his foundation. I mean, this guy, not only is he super brilliant, he is a super qualified environmental policy warrior, I mean, of decades. That's the kind of person that Leonardo DiCaprio has running his foundation. So, you know, he chooses these athletes of, you know, massive, you know, basically environment and the film industry, people who are just athletic in their ability. And that says a lot about him, I think.
Yeah, and I love how involved he is. And he doesn't use his name in a big way out here letting us know what he's doing, but I've heard this many times before about him. So it's great, another voice here for all of us to thrive and survive, as you said, as a species. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Dare to Dream Radio. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Josh Tickell about engaging the millennial generation. I cannot wait to hear more about this. Join me after the show on Facebook at Dare to Dream Radio and TV. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
MediaMasteryRadio.com. Learn how to get booked on radio, be paid in money, time, and sales quickly while helping others through your media visibility. At MediaMasteryRadio.com, learn how to get on radio and be interviewed. Debbie Dutchinger is a success and media expert who is a proven professional. Go to MediaMasteryRadio.com. Stop struggling to acquire clients. Learn to achieve instant visibility to the masses. Book radio interviews for a profitable business. Learn to communicate what you do and get results at MediaMasteryRadio.com.
MyBestsellerBook.com helps you self-publish and you keep all the royalties. Even if your book is already published, MyBestseller.com will help you become a best-selling author. Your book will be promoted to a large global following. Enjoy a press release and book review. Make your next book launch bigger and better. MyBestsellerBook.com has long-term client credibility and 100% success in turning books into bestsellers. MyBestsellerBook.com.
Welcome back to Dare to Dream. I'm interviewing Josh Tickell. You can find him at joshtickell.com. Josh, you are an award-winning keynote speaker on millennials. Fascinating. Generation Y. As a strategist, how can we start to engage the millennial generation? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Kiss the Ground is the current book that I have out. The one that is coming out right before the midterm elections this year is called The Revolution Generation. And the working subtitle is The War Against Millennials and How the Biggest Youth Culture is Disrupting Everything. And so, you know, I think the number one thing around today's youth generation, the number one mistake people make, and this is the vast majority of what is written, this is the vast majority of what is put online, is trying to sell them stuff. That is the number one goal of 90-something percent of all conversations about the millennial generation and Gen X and Gen Z as well, all of them. And so you've got this massive marketing industry that has been built up over time, ever since World War II, has been extremely focused on youth culture. And today the advertising and the marketing and the sort of the demographics to understand what every human being is doing in the youth space and to be able to sell them stuff before they even know that they want it. It's, you know, it's really disgusting. It's reached a proportion of any parent should be disgusted, and most young people are disgusted with that, while they are also disenfranchised with the economy, which has largely shunned them, and the political sphere, which is largely set up against them. You know, 2 out of 3 millennials in the U.S. will not graduate from college. They won't even go to college. One third will go to college. So you've got, you know,
and may I ask you, when you say that, is that because of finances today with college, or is that because of disinterest?
That's because of finances. The price of college is 400% higher for millennials than it was for baby boomers.
Right. I went to USC, and back in my day, it was like an unheard of price tag for a private college. Today, it's beyond the beyonds. I mean, people have to take out these enormous home number loans just to go to college. So I really understand. So if they're not going to go to college, then I imagine a new paradigm has to be created then. You know, it can't be that people show up for a job at some point if all the millennials are going forward and half of them are not going to have a college degree, then what's the new criteria?
Well, and that is an accurate assumption. We've got two-thirds of this generation that's being shoved into service jobs. The number one job for a millennial male in the United States is driver. Driver. So whether that's UPS or Lyft or Uber, it doesn't matter. That's what you get after you've gone through the American educational experience. You're allowed to drive a vehicle.
Wow.
So you can't expect 60 million people, the majority of this generation, to make minimum wage when minimum wage is the lowest it's been in 50 years in real dollar terms. Right. That's why we are seeing the absolute disruption of the political spectrum. That's why we're seeing cryptocurrency, which is about to disrupt the U.S. economy. We are on the precipice of radical and sweeping change, and it will be fueled by the youth generation.
You know, I'm so glad we're talking about this. I recently moved, I would say about 5 months ago, I moved into a brand new neighborhood in Los Angeles. And I had no conceptions. I was moving from Westwood, and I moved to this lovely neighborhood, mid-city, near Beverly Hills. And what I found, because I have a dog, so I take her out for walks often, is that my neighborhood is full of very, very, very young people. And that really surprised me. So all these 20-somethings, and what I found is that they were incredibly engaging, much more than any other generation, that they would stop. They didn't care that I was older than them. They didn't care what I did, but they wanted to have a real conversation. I found them to be incredibly open, incredibly friendly, giving, connecting, really surprised me. It happened so many times I thought, okay, this is not just a fluke pattern. This is actually something about that generation that exists. They really are connectors. So I love this about them, and I love learning this about them, and I actually like living here because of that. It makes it very nice for me. So for people like me or people who can employ millennials or help millennials, what are some critical tools for managing, retaining, invigorating the millennial workforce?
The most critical tool is to understand the education that they have had and the education that they haven't had by no fault of their own. Most managers in most small, medium, large businesses in the U.S. assume, whether they're Generation X, like myself, born in the 70s, or boomers, born in the 60s or earlier, they assume that millennials have the same education and life experiences as they did, meaning they learned how to drive a stick shift. They learned how to use a rotary dial phone and everything that came after that. But the reality of today's education system in America is that it is a fill-in-the-bubble, either-or education system geared for test results, short-term memory, and very, very, very little, cognitive decision-making, difficult decision-making. So, you know, most managers will expect new hires to have a skill set for which they have not been trained. So that's something that I've actually worked with Fortune 500 companies on, is creating mentorship programs and creating avenues of safe questioning Because when you assume that a hire has those skills and then you send them off to do that work, sometimes that person is terrified that they actually never learned any of that. So, you know, the first thing we say is, look, where's your mentorship program? 90-something percent of businesses don't have a mentorship program for millennials. It's the number one thing a business can do to create workplace harmony and to create retention and to really, you know, build bridges between very different generations. Because more than not, millennials have a lot of stuff that they would like to offer the businesses for whom they work, including how to use the phone, you know, how to use the smartphone. So it can be a very helpful relationship in both directions, but you've got to create that communication.
And do you agree with me about the nature of millennials? You married a millennial, right? And you've been with her for, I think, 7-8 years now, and now you work together. So do you agree that there's that very open nature, very connecting, very just willing to have a conversation and engage somebody else? I find those to be beautiful qualities.
Oh, absolutely. This is a generation that was raised with team spirit. It is all about team, and working together. Now, look, you'll find exceptions to the rule, but the middle of the bell curve, the vast majority of what the education system and after-school curricular activities were geared toward, even through college, was teamwork. So they're, as a generation, as a group of young people, they're very used to collaborating. They find it odd when people segregate themselves and go, you know, Gen X, we're lone wolves, you know? We were latchkey kids. Our parents were divorced. We had the child as horror movies, you know, The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. Children were bad. So we tend to be, as a generation, very, very, very nomadic. Completely the opposite with millennials. Very, very engaging as a whole, on the whole, as a group of people.
And so if that's true, are there ways that they still could learn to even better engage with people in older generations?
Well, look, I think the real war in America, and this is something my new book deals with, you know, the revolution generation, I think the real war in America is not a left and right war. I actually believe that is a smokescreen for a generational war. And it's so difficult for millennials to talk about this because so many of the institutional barriers that they face, whether it's to the economy, to jobs, to the life that they want to lead, even to marriage itself, have been set up by older generations. So the number one thing that I always say is, look, you know, the onus is on boomers, first of all, to understand the millennials, because you think you know about that generation, but you really don't.
Wow. All right, so this is a two-way street, and we all have to really, I don't know if work at it is the right way to say it, but just really make it happen. Just go out there, have these conversations, and start to help each other. Clearly, they know a lot. We don't yet. Clearly, we know we have wisdom that will assist them, and we can open doors because they're younger than we are. And I will say, there was recently on Survivor, they did, let me see if I could remember this, because it was millennials versus, it was the different generations, the three generations, and one of the generations on the TV reality show Survivor was millennials. And I was fascinated by the experiment and watching how they got along, how they worked together, how they teamed up, how they won things, what they cared about, didn't care about, incredibly different than us. And they had older people actually on their team. And this experiment was so fascinating to see how they could connect. Oh, I remember the work ethic was such a big deal for the older generation. They couldn't understand how the millennials would sit around. But the millennials had a real brand of genius that was indigenous just to them. And the older generation couldn't get it. So it was really, I loved the show, and I loved watching how everything unfolded and the differences, and it wasn't right, wrong, good, bad. It was just different, a different way of doing and being. I don't know if you caught the show, but you would have loved it.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. And this experiment's been done a number of times. You put a group of boomers or Gen Xers in a room and they immediately and give them a task and they immediately organize around hierarchy. You know, they vie for the alpha positions. Once that's settled, then they get to work based on basically bludgeoning each other into a sort of triangular shape. Whereas the millennials get together and they kind of form this circle, and immediately it's the group, you know?
Right.
It's so different. It's incredible to watch.
Yes, well said. Well, succinctly encapsulated there. So if you haven't seen it, you could always look up some replays just to see that dynamic. I think it was fascinating. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll be talking to Josh more about him personally, as well as a very interesting quote he made that we'll get the meaning of. And stay right there. We'll be right back.
Do you love wine? Do you enjoy drinking it or sharing it? Well, maybe you know a lot about wine, maybe you don't. Thanks for entrusting me with picking and choosing the most amazing wines from all over the world and delivering them to your home or business. You will receive as few or as many bottles of wine as you like, with tasting notes in your magical box of wine, detailing the regions, the history, and even food and wine pairing. We will deliver to you the best wine in the world. So get in, get wine, get social at directsellers.com/DebsWineWonders. Sit back and truly enjoy our wines, because we take great pride. We have invested a great deal of time selecting the most incredible wines from all over the world we know you'll enjoy and want to share. At directsellers.com/DebsWineWonders. That's direct, CELLARS.com/DebsWineWonders. Yum.
If you're tuning in after we've started, this is Debbie Dashinger on Dare to Dream Radio. I'm interviewing Josh Tickell. Again, you can find him at Josh Tickell, TICKELL.com. Josh, I'm curious, what have you learned about? This is Dare to Dream, so I'm going to go a little more into the personal. Anything you've learned about moving forward in your life after setbacks?
Wow, great question. After setbacks. You know, I have two, with my wife, we have two small children. So the setbacks are daily, you know, from being up all night with a teething baby to somebody's back goes out. You know, life, you think setbacks are these huge things that, these massive failures, and sometimes they are, but sometimes it's the day-to-day failures that are also extremely important to bounce back from. And for me personally, failure is always a reckoning. It's always a moment to learn. It's always a moment to take stock in what's important. Usually what I find is important after I've failed is not what I was going after. So I look at, where is my joy? Where is the love? Where is the happiness? Where am I really making a difference? And when I measure my success, when I remeasure myself against those, then sometimes I realize that whatever I was going after in the first place, my big failure, wasn't really a failure. So I think it's all about your expectations and how you measure your own success. What are your metrics for achievement? Is it more money? Is it more likes on Facebook? Whatever it is, you know, does that bring you joy? Because at the end of the day, if you're failing at that stuff, chances are it's not bringing you joy.
So then I have a question for you. It's a very personal question, but I'm hearkening back to something you said earlier, because you were talking about your real joy, your real love is farming. And you're, interestingly enough, finding yourself in probably a very enviable position where you're really out in front of people. You're speaking on stages, you're on very major TV shows being interviewed, you've got these award-winning show movies that you're making. How do you find then the joy? Does that sometimes feel like a setback to you, or how do you find the complement or the balance there?
You know, I balance what is, you know, there's the long term and there's the short term. Mm-hmm. In the short term, I am super committed to these important pieces of what I see as a larger puzzle for our generations, for this time in history. I'm super committed to my playing my part in bringing those pieces of information to light. I'm not always going to do it the same way. I'm not always going to do it the speed with this fervor. But right now, the critical pieces like Kiss the Ground, the soil can literally sequester the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. That's a critical piece of information for this time, for our civilization. If that piece of information makes it out, and it makes it out in an impactful way, we will literally change the course of human civilization. So I have an obligation to that. Do I look at our avocado farm and go, gosh, you know, I'd really kind of rather be out there tending that, planting that, making a furrow here, making a wall there? Yeah, I do, and I'll get to that. But it's kind of like I'm farming on a global level. I'm planting seeds with the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And I know those seeds are going to grow. And those people, whether it's 10, whether it's 100, whether it's 100,000, it doesn't matter. Those are the people who are really going to be at the forefront of this change. So yeah. I do. I farm every day. Whether I get to put my hands in the dirt or not, I'm always farming.
Love it. Who's been your greatest inspiration? Who's really influenced you or mentored you into a new way of being?
You know, I have a lot of great mentors and teachers, some of whom are completely unknown. But I look at every opportunity. I try and learn about a new mentor. You know, I'm watching the Jane Goodall documentary now.
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, it's beautiful. She starts by saying, you know, I wanted to do the things that men traditionally did, and it didn't seem to me that it should be a problem for me to do those things. And I just think that's such an awesome place to go. You know, I want to do the things that, you know, are difficult or are undoable or that are people don't believe can be done. That's a great place to stand, because then no one can tell you can't do it, you know? It's like, well, no, that's what I want to do. Thank you for your opinion. So, you know, Jane's my mentor of the week.
I so get that. Yeah, I was very blown away in the beginning of the movie where she talked about as a child, remember that dream she talks about growing up and just seeing herself being surrounded by animals. And that's all she felt drawn to. And then she gets this job that she's a secretary and she's doing what women did in her day. And it's amazing that this should come to her, because she's Switzerland, basically. She's so neutral, they think she'll be able to bring back the data. And when in fact, she's living out a dream she has had since she's a child, to be surrounded by these gorillas. And it's just amazing what she has created for us and what is still ongoing in her name. So if you haven't had a chance, folks, go check out Jane. It really is beautiful. And I get why she would be a mentor for you, why somebody really, I mean, and living like that too. That was such a big deal to live out in the wild. There was very little for her, you know, the tent, the food. That was it. But incredible to live like that. And, you know, you have a quote that I was very curious about, Josh, and that quote is, You can't disassemble a bomb unless you understand how it was built. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's great. I don't remember saying that, but it seems like something I would have said. You know, when we look at these crises that we face, we talked about this earlier in the show, global warming, you know, all of this stuff, we tend to forget to go back to the basics. And this is what I speak to young people. A lot of young people come up to me and they go, oh, I want to change the world. I want to be a coder. I want to learn to code. You know, I want to build things, apps and the internet. And I go, why? And that, you know, they always have their reasons. But underneath all of that is a strong desire to make a difference, to make something. And I go, why don't you learn to code with nature? You know, biology is the science that is going to save our species because it is the ignored arm of science. And it is the only way that we're going to balance the climate, that we're going to deal with the water crisis, that we're going to be able to feed 10 billion people, is to understand Mother Nature better. And that's what I mean by disassembling something before you go after it, before you try and neutralize something. You have to go back to the fundamental pieces. And we forget that a lot. We go after these big problems and we forget, wow, if we just look at the elemental equation, how do we get to this point? You can build a solution from there very quickly.
Well, with solutions, I know one of them that you talk about in your books is about food. How can food transform our life? How can food impact the world?
Well, Kiss the Ground, the book, the movie that's coming out, but especially the book. We emphasize food a lot more in the book than in the film. And the reason is because we, as Americans, we vote three times a day. We vote every time we eat. We vote for an agricultural system. That system itself perpetuates either the desertification of the planet or it perpetuates the regeneration of the soil. And we know if we regenerate soils, we regenerate water holding. If we regenerate water, we regenerate food. We can grow more of it. We can feed more people. And ultimately, we pull the carbon out of the atmosphere into the soil. So why don't we use those food choices? And it turns out that regenerative food, which we talk about in Kiss the Ground, which is food that is grown in a way that regenerates soil, is actually more nutritious. So it's better for your body. And this is not a conversation of, here's what you have to be a vegan or you have to be an omnivore. Any dietary restrictions or choices that you make going into this, you can keep. The only ones that you have to get rid of are the foods that are really bad for you and really bad for the planet.
Okay, I have so many thoughts listening to you, so I'm just going to hold them for our next segment because you bring up so many great points. This is really a salient conversation, and I thank you for it. I thank you for going there. So before we take a break, we've been talking a little bit about books, and I know some of you would love to write a book and be an author. Well, if you do, hire a certified coach, someone who will ensure you finish your book and write a page turner. I'm a book coach. I take your book to guaranteed international bestseller, and I assist with media interview bookings. Get your book written, take it to bestseller, and you, your book, get interviewed. Is it time to get your manuscript out there? Just email bestseller@debbiedashinger.com to get started. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
What books are you reading? Are you ready for a must-read? Winner of the Inspirational Book of the Year Award and international bestsellers, Dare to Dream, This Life Counts by Debbie Dashinger, as well as the acclaimed Wisdom to Success, The Surefire Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams. Buy the books from Amazon today. U.S. Book Review and Writer's Digest said these are critics' picks. By Debbie Dashinger, Dare to Dream and Wisdom to Success contain gems to live your life by.
MediaMasteryRadio.com. Learn how to get booked on radio, be paid in money, time, and sales quickly while helping others through your media visibility. At MediaMasteryRadio.com, learn how to get on radio and be interviewed. Debbie Dutchinger is a success and media expert who is a proven professional. Go to MediaMasteryRadio.com. Stop struggling to acquire clients. Learn to achieve instant visibility to the masses. Book radio interviews for a profitable business. Learn to communicate what you do and get results at MediaMasteryRadio.com.
MyBestsellerBook.com helps you self-publish and you keep all the royalties. Even if your book is already published, MyBestseller.com will help you become a best-selling author. Your book will be promoted to a large global following. Enjoy a press release and book review. Make your next book launch bigger and better. MyBestsellerBook.com has long-term client credibility and 100% success in turning books into bestsellers. MyBestsellerBook.com.
Welcome back. Debbie Dashinger. I'm speaking with Josh Tickell, who's an award-winning film director and best-selling author. Josh's films and books focus on critical issues, including the need for alternative energy, reversing climate change, and the power of millennials to change the world. You can find him at joshtickell.com. You know, something you talk about, Josh, that I'm curious about is how we can build a sustainable business. Can you talk about what elements are needed for our businesses to go workable and maintainable?
Sure. We tend to think of business as a very linear thing. Most businesses are somewhere in the curve of extraction of resources, creation of a thing, and then consumption of those things. So it's a straight line, you know, from basically from Mama Earth to the garbage dump. That's what most business is engaged with. Of course, there is a service industry that just provides services, but ultimately those services are serving people who are engaged in the linear consumption of stuff. Mm-hmm. So to make business sustainable, which is really what the conversation was about in the 60s and 70s, you have to close the loop. You have to recycle. You have to bring your water back, you have to clean all of that stuff up and make sure you're not creating waste, or creating as close to zero waste as possible. The new concept, and this is a radical diversion, this is very disruptive thinking, but this is where we are going as a civilization. And this really came out of our work on Kiss the Ground, the book, is regenerative businesses. What if your business didn't just sustain itself and the environment? What if it didn't just consume quantities and then recycle them? What if it actually left the earth better than when it started? And that's the primary directive of the regenerative business model. Can you improve an area? Can you improve an ecosystem? Can you improve habitat? Can you improve the number of species via your business activities? And that includes human habitat and human well-being as well. So that's the ultimate, and I think that's the new era that we're entering into as we reach up to 10 billion people on this planet, is how do we got to do better than sustain. We got to regenerate.
A regenerative business that leaves the earth better than when the business started, what can our businesses improve? I'm curious if you have an example of that that you can share.
Well, let's look at plastics. You know, in America, everything is shrink-wrapped in plastic. You can't buy a shoelace without getting it, you know, in the mail, shrink-wrapped in plastic. And that's insane, because all of that plastic comes from petroleum, and, you know, never mind the greenhouse gas implications, it has to be extracted from the earth. So that is the traditional model of ultimate, you know, narcissism. We think we're so important as human beings that we're just going to destroy everything so that we can get shoelaces wrapped in plastic. That's truly crazy. In Australia, most of the plastic that you'll find, and more of the plastic in the grocery store, is biodegradable. So it's made by 100% biodegradable products. More and more, they're looking at sustainable, and they're going toward regenerative crops to grow that biodegradable plastic. So here's a cycle. The crop is making the soil better. The process to make the plastic is relatively benign. You create a product that then biodegrades and improves whatever microbes it gets eaten by. The whole cycle made the earth better than the degraded earth that it was grown on, which was degraded from man's use. So that's an example of how a crazy business can be turned into a regenerative business.
Interesting. And is there anybody on the forefront doing this?
Many people.
Okay. Is your film going to...
We could go on for hours.
Right.
We could go
yeah.
on. Yeah.
And
yeah,
your
exactly.
film, will it talk about, because is that part of the hope of the film that you're working on, that we can learn more about businesses like that?
We, you know, in Kiss the Ground, the movie, we get to the point of, here's how we reverse global warming. That's the thrust of that film. You're left to really explore the topic at the end of the film in terms of the regenerative movement. Is I see Kiss the Ground, the movie, the book. There's a great nonprofit folks should check out, Southern California-based Kiss the Ground, kisstheground.com. All of it. We are just working on the first layer of the regenerative conversation. There are so many layers beyond that in terms of business, enterprise, reorganization of politics, the economy. This is going to go deep. We're just trying to get the word out about base layer right now.
Great. Love it. Okay. Well, I can't wait for the film. Now I'm really intrigued. I'm going to ask you this question because this is Dare to Dream, Josh. What are you next, Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
I really want to travel with my family. I mentioned we have two small kids. My son just turned a year. My daughter's getting ready to turn 4 years old. And my wife and I were going to take a few years off when they got a little older. We've decided to really emphasize a lifestyle in which we can take both kids and just take them on the road for a year or two. Now, naturally, that means a little bit of book tour, a little bit of film tour in there, too. But we want the focus, and our dream is to have the focus of our time be together with our children, with our family.
Nice. And on a daily basis, what daily ritual or practice do you engage in that helps keep you heart-centered and grounded so you could do the big work you're doing?
My two favorite things to do, one is yoga. That's pretty normal for California. a little woo-woo for people who may not be in California, but I've been practicing yoga on and off for 20 years, and I've worked with many teachers, and I find it to be an incredible grounding, heart-opening practice. And the second thing I do is I run off in the wilderness. I run on these trails that are miles and miles and miles away from civilization, and I find that nature speaks to me. Nature infuses me with a different energy. I am a different human being if I can do that one or two times a week. My long runs, I really come back into why I do what I do when I get to do those long runs in nature.
Well, it has really been a pleasure having you on the show. And please let us know, Josh, when the movie is out. We'll promote it here for you as well. Thank you so much for being with us on Dare to Dream.
Great, Debbie. Thank you so much for having me.
Really love this. And I'm going to end today's show with a quote from Josh Tickell. Imagine people growing hemp and making everything from food to fuel without petroleum. Next up on Dare to Dream Radio, I am featuring John Sally, the four-time NBA champ, who talks about food and also what's right and light for this planet. And after that will be Lynn McTaggart. You can subscribe to my inspirational YouTube videos at youtube.com/DebOnTheRadio. Thank you so much for joining me today on Dare to Dream. And remember, the secret of success is having the courage to begin in the first place.
To contact the award-winning syndicated Dare to Dream radio show, go to debbiedashinger.com. Keep your excellent feedback and comments coming. Your host, Debbie Dashinger, is an expert at goal achievement, a media personality, an international best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. Debbie leads high-quality teleseminars on how to achieve goals, how to be a self-published best-selling author, and how to get booked on radio. All classes are at debbiedashinger.com. Debbie's best-selling books are Dare to Dream, This Life Counts, sold on Amazon, and her second book, Wisdom to Success, The Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams, sold online at all bookstores. Tune in again to hear the next inspiring interview guest who has turned their vision into a successful reality. Want more support in making your dreams come true? Go to debbiedashinger.com. That's www.debbiedashinger.com. You'll see videos, MP3s, archived interviews, and amazing products sharing the secret steps to making your dreams come true. Remember to dream big with every expectation that your dream will become real. Dreams are free, so free your dreams. What do you dare to dream?
Here I'm standing now, waiting for my time to be all that I can be. It's so easy to forget, life is in my hands, and I can change it if I want. Nothing's impossible.